This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome, Dreamers, to this long overdue final installment of the DreamPod / Dreamcast Years crossover event. We've covered the years 1999, 2000 and 2001, so it's only logical that today we look at the year 2002. Joining me, Andrew, on this journey today are two of my co-hosts from the Dreamcast Years podcast, Mr. Richard Eltsey and Mr. Jason Bajant. How are you both doing?
Hello, I'm not too bad, Andrew.
Good. Jason?
Hello. Yes, I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. Of course, you've now joined the DreamPod team, Rich, but for today, you're Dreamcast Years only, all right?
Oh, okay, that's fine. I can turn one of you guys halfway through, so.
So joining me from the Dreamcast Junkyard are two stalwarts of the DreamPod. It's Mr. Lewis Cox and Mr. Tom Charnock. How are you both doing?
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on the pod. It's an honor. I've listened to all of these previous years' crossovers, and I've spent many a moment shouting into the ether at the quizzes at the end. So it's great to finally be on one.
It will be fun. Lewis, you good?
I've unfortunately got an ear infection, but luckily this pod is here to distract me from the searing pain. So yeah.
Sorry, shouldn't I laugh then? That's not nice, is it?
Laughing at Lewis's pain.
Yeah, you bastard. I'm gonna join Rich and Jason. See you, Tom.
Tom on his own for the podcast. But I'm glad that we could get you on, Tom. Literally, you have been bugging me about being on one of these since I started doing them, and I finally managed to drag you on one. So glad you could be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Saved the best till last, right?
Well, we don't know about that. I mean, well, I'll try to offer something, but
got a lot to live up to now.
I'm trying to butter him up for a guest slot on my own podcast, you see. So
anytime,
anytime. The hustle
never stops.
If you haven't listened to one of these before, it's essentially a mashup of the DreamPod and the Dreamcast Years formula, where we discuss one particular year in the life of the Dreamcast while it was on the market. We'll look at what the world was like in that year, how the Dreamcast was doing, and the games that made that year memorable. And then we'll end with a bit of a quiz, as Tom alluded to there. So that's going to be exciting. But before we jump into it, I have a now traditional opening question for all of you. Are you ready for this?
No.
I guess.
See how this goes. In the UK, the two films that topped the box office in the year 2002 were sequels, which was Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and Star Wars Episode II: Attack of the Clones. Which was the best? Fight. Go for it.
I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films. I've never read a single word of any of the books. I know the sort of general idea. But on that basis alone, I'm going to say Star Wars. That's it. Just because I've never seen Harry Potter.
I mean, do you think that Episode II: Attack of the Clones is a good film?
Not really. No, it's pants. But it's like I can't really comment on the other one. So it's like by default, it wins for me.
Fair. Jason.
Do you know, I used to quite like Attack of the Clones back in the day, but recently rewatching it, it didn't hold up very well for me. And rewatching Harry Potter with the children as well over the last year or so, it's hard question to answer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually hadn't realised. I mean, I kind of did, but I hadn't realised how difficult of a question this is. I mean, Attack of the Clones, possibly the least liked Star Wars movie ever made, and then Harry Potter, made by J.K. Rowling. It's like, how do you choose? Lewis, how do you choose?
I mean, you guys probably will be surprised by this, but probably Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets is a better film. I kind of like those first two Harry Potter films where it's like they're kids and it's all really exciting and magical and like wonderful for them. But then after that, they all get like really broody and like angsty and dark. And I just think this was like the last hurrah of warm fuzzies of that series, you know, before it got like kind of dark. And also it spawned a really good Game Boy Color game, which was like a turn-based RPG. It was like the last Game Boy Color game released in Europe. Wow. And for some reason, like, I had it and it was amazing. But also Star Wars Attack of the Clones did give us Star Wars Battlefront 2 on PS2, so that is a score for that. But as films, yeah, it's like Attack of the Clones is kind of bad, isn't it? Yeah,
Rich, what are you thinking?
Pretty much word for word what Tom's answer was. I've never watched any Harry Potter. I've got no interest in it. Attack of the Clones is pretty much like the most unremarkable Star Wars movie of all, but it's still better than the Disney ones, minus Rogue One, of course, which is the best film ever made. But yeah, I don't say that enough, so I just remind everyone that Rogue One's the best Star Wars movie ever made.
It is incredible. Yeah, I agree. I mean, so we have a tie there, really. We have Harry Potter 2, Attack of the Clones 2. I'm going to have to break this tie, aren't I? Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Lewis, in terms of the fact the first two Harry Potter films were brilliant. I think it was Chris Columbus who directed those two films. Mm. And then we had, and I can't for the life of me remember his name now, the guy who directed the third film.
Alfonso Cuarón something.
Cuarón or Cuarón.
Cuarón, yeah.
Yeah, that's the guy. So I really enjoyed that because I think Prisoner of Azkaban was my favourite. I read all the books, so you know, before everything happened, in the before times. And Prisoner of Azkaban was my favourite of the books because it kind of all of a sudden turned dark after everything had happened. But then after that, I think the films, for me, the first three films are the best. And then after that, they got a bit iffy. But yeah, I agree. Like Chamber of Secrets is fantastic. So
I also thought the fella who played Dumbledore, but he unfortunately passed away, didn't he? I thought he was so much better as that character. You know, I always pictured him as like sort of this frail old kind of gentle man, and then in like the later films he's shouting at Harry.
Well, he turned into like kind of Gandalf, doesn't he? It's like, you shall not pass, kind of wizard. So yeah,
because it was Richard Harris, wasn't it? I think he was in Gladiator, I think,
originally. It was Michael Gambon who took over.
That's the one.
Because say my main memory of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets was it was like the first time as a kid where like we went to see it in the cinema and there was no other seats and we were on the front row. And like there's no other thing in life where being on the front row is shit, but being at the cinema on the front row is always shit. Like you're literally there like craning your neck like trying to see. That was a life lesson learned that day.
I was going to say, just on Daniel Radcliffe's sort of post-Harry Potter films, I did see one recently called Escape from Pretoria, which was actually really, really good. So if you wanted to see anything with him actually doing some other acting, I'd highly recommend that one. It's almost like a Prison Break-style film. It's really, really well done.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I keep meaning to watch the one where he plays a corpse in it, when he's like, he gets used as a raft and he just farts and,
Swiss Army Man.
That's the one, yeah.
Keep meaning to watch the one that got guns sewed to his hands, isn't there?
Guns Akimbo. Yeah.
That's it.
Is it any good? I've never seen that. I've not seen that one.
It looks good. I've got it on Blu-ray. I mean, I say this for every film, that I've got it on Blu-ray. I've not watched it yet.
Yeah, I really like him as an actor. Like, he was good in What If was a good film he was in. And then there was one I'd watched recently. Imperial, I think. That's a good one as well.
Oh, Imperium. Is it something to do with like neo-Nazis or something? Yeah.
Yeah, he like goes to investigate them. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really good film as well. He's a good actor.
He is.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well that settled that then. Harry Potter, we obviously favour J.K. Rowling over Natalie Portman's terrible acting in Attack of the Clones. So let's move on. All right, let's remind ourselves, and this is everybody's favourite bit, of course. Let's remind ourselves of what was going on in the world 20 years ago. Are we ready for this?
No, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I've not got any song puns for you, by the way. I don't do that in these particular ones.
This will be what I was looking forward to the most.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Yeah, there's no song puns.
What's the point, Les? What's the point, Andrew?
Ah. I don't think I did any the last time, did I? I don't remember doing any the last time for the crossover. Oh, well. Well, I'll see if I can drop some in at some point. We'll see how it goes. But let's look at the amazing news, the amazing events that were going on in the world 20 years ago. So in 2002, in the 1st of January this year, the euro was introduced as a currency to several eurozone countries. So there's that. It's actually been going pretty well. The euro's actually done well. People didn't think it was going to do well at all. And look at it now. Still there. About the same as the sterling currently on the stock exchange. So it's done all right for itself. The Queen's sister, Princess Margaret, died of a stroke in this year. And the Queen's mother, also confusingly called Elizabeth, died several months later at the age of 101. The Potter's Bar rail crash killed 7 people in this year, and England were defeated in the World Cup quarterfinals by Brazil. In August of this year, the disappearance of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman unfolds, ending in the eventual arrest of their killer, Ian Huntley.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I remember learning about that on News Round, and young me was like, the world is a dark place, and yeah.
Didn't he, like, do an interview, like, prior to them? And he was clearly, he had done it, and then did an interview on the news. It was like, what?
Was he, like, their school janitor?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, crazy.
Crazy. Oh, here we go, we've got another one, Andrew. Go on, keep going.
Okay, I know, I've got more.
It gets darker.
The Moore's murderer, Myra Hindley, finally killed the bucket. Killed the bucket? Finally kicked the bucket. She killed the bucket.
She can't
as well.
Be stopped.
In November of this year.
Killing animal objects.
she died in 2002, thankfully.
It's a good job this podcast coming to an end. We're going to get cancelled at this rate.
Yeah.
It's all right. I think I finished with the bad news. Sound of the Underground, the first single from Popstars Arrivals winner Girls Aloud, becomes Christmas number one in this year.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, the other people they were up against, whatever song they gave them was so shit. And then, like, versus Sound of the Underground, like, it was, they were always going to win. Like,
yeah.
Rigged.
Was it like a boy band that they were up against?
One True Voice.
Oh, God. I'm impressed that you remember that, Lewis.
Yeah, that's great memory, that is.
My sister was, like, absolutely... every update about this whole, like, competition, she was giving me all the lowdown at the time.
Yeah, so. your sister got it.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Stranger Things actors Finn Wolfhard, Sadie Sink, and Gaten Matarazzo were all born in 2002. Ooh, I think I pronounced that name right. Matarazzo.
Now I feel really old.
Yeah.
How old are they meant to be in the series? Are they meant to be like sort of like they're meant to be like pre-teens, aren't they?
I think they're teens. I think, well, in the latest series, I think they're meant to be like 14, 15 or something.
Yeah,
So they're actually more. They are 20 years old in real life. But you get that quite often, don't you? In Hollywood, like you get people playing younger than they are.
Yeah. Like when Saved by the Bell was on, and they were all about 40. Yeah. They're meant to be like 16.
So TV shows debuting in the UK this year included Flog It, Dick and Dom in the Bungalow, Footballers' Wives, Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway, and Most Haunted. It's a great year for British TV.
Oh, God. Most Haunted's just like the best comedy you could ever watch, honestly.
Derek Acora.
Oh, yes, Derek Acora, yeah.
Fortunately, he's died now. So.
Has he?
Yeah, he died a few years back. My mum actually went to see him live. Once, and I think she just he was just weird.
So, has anybody successfully channeled him from down the
ground? Somebody needs to do that and then go on the new Most Haunted channeling Derek Cora for the whole time.
I won't put it past the producers of that show.
How meta, you know what I mean? Like, being Derek from Beyond the Grave.
But then would channeled Derek be channeling other spirits?
Yeah.
Well, you could just talk to him, couldn't he? Because he's like on the same plane, the same astral plane as the ghosts now.
Margaret says she's here as well.
Oh, because this is the one when there was like the two ghosts. It was like the, there was like, I remember the one who was channeling some lovers, and there was a woman called Fanny, and a woman called Mary, and a guy called Dick, and he just kept saying Mary loves Dick. And like, Yvette Fielding was just like, just kill me now. He just kept saying over and over with no shred of self-awareness at all. Oh, just Mary loves Dick, Mary loves Dick. And I was like, please stop.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
I swear they never found an actual ghost on that program. They'd be like, watch this replay, and then it'd like, you'd look, see this like black like sort of footage with like a few dots moving around, and you're like, oh my god, do you see it? And it's like, no, I don't.
It's an orb. It's an orb, clearly. Yeah.
Oh god, the orbs. I love the orbs. Yeah,
definitely not just dust flying across the screen. Meanwhile, the US got the likes of The Osbournes, The Bachelor, American Idol, Blue's Clues, Dora the Explorer, and Firefly. As mentioned before, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and Star Wars Episode II Attack of the Clones were released this year, alongside films like Spider-Man, Men in Black 2, Die Another Day, Signs, Minority Report, and The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Good luck, films there.
Die Another Day.
A truly horrific turn from Madonna as the fencing instructor.
Oh, yeah.
It's very bad. I didn't mind the song, though. Like, it was a very different Bond theme tune, and I didn't really mind it very much, but I remember people hating on it at the time.
I had it on CD single, and I thought it was great, so, you know. Hate is gonna hate.
Well, exactly. Sigmund Freud analysed this, indeed. while we're talking about music, let's take a look at the top 10 albums of 2002 here in the UK. Always a good signifier of how good a year was. I'm going to go from 10 up till number 1. Are we prepared for the musical stylings of 2002?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So the number 10 album of the year was Heathen Chemistry by Oasis.
Oh, classic. Banger, that. Banger.
Yeah. Number 9 was Elvis, 30 number 1 hits.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, Elvis styled with a 1 instead of an I. Number 8, Unbreakable, The Greatest Hits, Volume 1 by Westlife. Obviously thought a lot of themselves, thinking there'd be more than just Volume 1. The Eminem Show was at number 7 by Eminem.
I have a sad story about this. I really wanted this album, and we're in, I think it was something like MVC or something like that with my mum, and we see it. And like back then, like CDs were like ridiculously expensive. We see it, and it was like a bit cheaper than usual. And I was like, oh, mum, can we get this? Can you get me the Eminem Show? We get to the counter and the guy goes, you know, this is the clean version, right? And I went, oh, it don't matter. I want the CD. Like, let me have the CD.
Oh,
no. Yeah. Don't buy a censored Eminem album. Yeah.
Is it just constant bleeping or silences or something all the way through?
Right. If anyone's heard an Eminem song called Drips, it's very rude. On the clean version of the CD, the track just isn't there.
Really?
Like, wow. Yeah. The song's just missing. Wow. They obviously couldn't censor it enough, you know, that censored it out of existence. So, yeah, I'll always remember that. It was very sad.
I hope you got the uncensored album at some point down the line.
Oh, yeah, Apple Music. Just click and download now, you know.
There you go. Yeah, very true. Number 6, then, was By The Way by Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I actually really like. I thought it was a really good album. Maybe just me. Yeah.
No, good.
Yeah. I always thought it was just me. Everybody seemed to really like Californication, and then when By The Way came out, everybody was like, "Eh," like they were over the Red Hot Chili Peppers all of a sudden. I was like, "This is really good. What's wrong with it?"
No, it's good. It is good.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the new album, mind you, but that's another story. Number 5, One Love by Blue. Anybody remember
One
Blue?
Love, my mother's bread. Yeah.
Yeah, our American listeners going, what the hell? Number 4, A Rush of Blood to the Head by Coldplay.
People think they're cool if they hate Coldplay. I think this is a good-ass album. I'm going to like die on that hill, yeah.
I'm dying on the hill with you, but Lewis, it's fine.
Scientist is all right if that's the album it's off of.
With like the weird reversed video, yeah.
Yeah, that song's all right, so...
There you go.
See, we won you over a little bit, Rich.
Okay, number 3. Escape by Enrique Iglesias. Number 2, Misunderstood by Pink. Another very good album.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very good album. And number 1, Escapology by Robbie Williams.
Yeah. Robbie Williams is kind of like, it's like wedding music, isn't it? It's just like, it's always there at a wedding.
Mm.
So it's kind of become a bit cliched, I don't know, but obviously he's a very successful artist in the UK. I'm not sure about elsewhere, but...
Yeah, very true. I know him through somebody. I've never met him, but when I was at university, one of the guys who was on my course was his cousin and would constantly go on about him. So, but we later found out they barely knew each other, so he was literally just trying to get people to like him by saying that he was cousins with Robbie Williams. So, there you go.
Would that have been at the height of his kind of popularity then?
I mean, I was at university in 2002, 2003, so yeah. All right, well, that's all the news for the year. That was what 2002 was like. A bit depressing and some all right music. So, yeah. You know, it was all right. It wasn't too bad overall.
20 years ago. 20 years.
20 years.
Think about that.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Mad.
Crazy. But, I mean, you know, it was, well, Dreamcast was still around. Of course, it had been discontinued by this point. In our 2001 episode, we kind of went through that whole discontinuation and the sadness that brought to many people. But by 2002, it had been long discontinued. And it was probably quite a surprise to many people that there were still games coming out for it at this point. But actually, the final games for the Dreamcast were being released in 2002 for North America and PAL regions anyway. Japan continued for some years afterwards in dribs and drabs. But North America got one final game in 2002, and I think we got around 10 to 12 games in here. Some not so great, some okay. So yeah, not too bad for 2002.
Do you know what's like a weird thing I just realised? When the Queen Mother passed away, they showed the service on TV. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing Dreamcast with my friend on the little TV where we had the Dreamcast, and then, like, you know, it was on the bigger TV, they were showing it. And so that means, like, that would have been in 2002, what I'm thinking of. So, and, like, but to me, I think I've mentioned this before, like, I was like, what, 7 when this all happened, maybe? So, and I just thought, like, the Dreamcast was, like, super cool, like, that my friend had. I never knew any of this stuff about it was the end for the Dreamcast. I thought it was this cool console that was, like, the coolest thing ever. You know, long may it live. But, yeah, little did I know that it was, sad days for Sega.
Poor 7-year-old Lewis.
It's interesting as well, Lewis, that you mentioned that, because I know there's a story that I have similar, which is, in the same kind of realm, but it is the fact that when September 11th happened, obviously that was 2001, I distinctly remember turning off my brand new PlayStation 2 to turn the news on, because my mum rang me to say, have you seen the news? And I was playing on the PS2 that I'd literally just got after swapping my Dreamcast for it. So that's almost, it's kind of intrinsically linked with, you know, the events of the era. And that just obviously shows that I'd kind of already... I'd had my mind turned that the Dreamcast was now, like, sort of on its way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get a PS2 because it's, you know, it's a new thing to have. But then when I went to uni that following year, I rebought a Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's weird. It's bringing back loads of memories from that very specific period in time that's linked, obviously, to the news as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're going to talk about those final games that I mentioned in a bit, or at least some of them anyway. There weren't many. As I said, Japan got quite a few in 2002, but yeah. So many games destined for the Dreamcast started to come out on other next-generation consoles instead. Quite a few. Can anybody remember any from the top of their head that came out this year on other consoles?
Gun Valkyrie, was that one of them on the Xbox?
Yeah, I believe that's true. Yeah, there's quite a few on the Xbox, right? So we've got Crazy Taxi 3 as well, although I don't know if that was 2002. But
what about Panzer Dragoon, the one on the Xbox?
Orta.
That's it. Because that wasn't that destined for the Dreamcast originally?
It was, yeah, very true. I mean, even Super Monkey Ball for the GameCube was originally destined for the Dreamcast, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
It was too late for Half-Life, wasn't it? That would have been out the year before had it have come out. Am I wrong?
That had already been cancelled, by that point.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, you also had... I think these were, like, 2001 releases, but you had, like, Choo Choo Rocket on Game Boy Advance.
True.
And you had Sonic Advance, which was, like, what? Like, Sonic's on a Nintendo console. That sort of mind-blowing, you know, realisation as well, so...
Anybody else remember any others that came out? I think there was some on the PS2, right, as well?
There were ports of things. Didn't Headhunter get ported to the PS2 as well?
It did. That's correct, yeah.
Oh, 18-wheeler. Yeah, 18-wheeler, Ferrari F355, that was one as well. F355 was updated slightly because it had more modes. It had more camera angles, so you could race outside the vehicle, that kind of thing. Although there is a cheat in the Dreamcast version, I believe, that you can enable that with various shenanigans. But yeah, a lot of those sort of first-party, the Acclaim published ones did come out on the other consoles, yeah.
Apparently we got a Jet Set Radio Future in 2002 as well, which is...
Brilliant game.
Oh, and Sega GT as well, which came on the disc, didn't it? It came on a double disc with the original Xbox.
Yeah, that's right.
Possibly Shenmue 2 on Xbox as well. Sorry, I know we're like rounding everything up now, but yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that was 2002, I believe, and that came with the Shenmue movie on DVD, which is just all the cutscenes.
Yeah.
All pasted together, which is interesting.
Yeah,
the Xbox basically was Dreamcast 2, right? I mean, the amount of Sega games that it got in those early years was like incredible. Like, it's Otagi and stuff. Is it Otogi? Otagi? Mm. So, yeah.
Or Res as well, of course. That came to the PS2, didn't it?
Yeah. Of course, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. With its own trans vibrator, if I remember rightly.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, those early years of Sega going completely third party were actually really successful for Sega on the other consoles. They were just smashing it on all of them, really. It was Sega now that is a bit...
I mean, it was
really...
probably easy for them back then, though, because they already had the games, right? Like, they were developing these things for the Dreamcast, so all they had to do is port them over, whereas... Now they don't really make that many games themselves, so I guess it's more difficult.
And I imagine at the time, I imagine Nintendo, Sony were probably throwing money at them to say, come to our system, get Sonic on our system, that kind of thing. They probably wanted a lot of their IPs as much as, previously they'd been rivals, who doesn't want Sonic on their system,
Very different to today. I mean, although Sonic Frontiers does look pretty cool, but still.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers firmly crossed, absolutely. This year as well, the Dream Arena was phased out. I think SegaNet had already been starting to phase out in 2001, and Drycast stuck around till 2003, possibly later, if I remember rightly. But Dream Arena, itself, that started to be phased out. I think that's when we got the final Dream Arena disc, version 3, I think, that allowed you to surf the web still. You didn't have to log in to the Dream Arena servers anymore.
You could choose your own ISP at that point. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. So they kind of knew... Well, that's kind of nice of them, actually, because these days they wouldn't even bother, would they, to allow you to kind of be able to log in still. They just go, the servers are down now, you can no longer use anything.
Yeah.
And then who put the BT number on friends and family so you could get cheaper calls?
Oh, yes.
Well, there we go. That's kind of a bit of what was going on with the Dreamcast. But, as we've alluded to, there weren't actually that many games that came out this year, so I think it was a bit of a tough choice in choosing a game. So each of our, I don't know what to call you now. I was going to call you each of our people. I'll start again. What is wrong with me?
Each
today?
Of our flesh sacks.
Each of the lovely people joining me today, not flesh sacks. Lovely yeah. people. Each of the lovely people joining me today had to choose a game to discuss. And in the Dreamcast years way, we are going to decide whether it was a game changer, just a game, or a bit shit. And we're going to go through them one by one. There were a few games that we didn't cover here, so please don't shout at us. But some of the big games that weren't chosen were things like Phantasy Star Online Version 2, which I think we covered previously, the original version anyway, and also Sakura Wars 4. That wasn't chosen either. There's a couple of others as well, but as I say, there wasn't that many to choose from.
I mean, unless you knew Japanese, who was playing Sakura Wars 4 back in 2002? But yeah.
True. I think people tried, though. There's all the GameFAQ or GameFAQ guides that you could get. Press this button, now press this button.
I reckon that game will be translated by the end of this decade, because there's a Sakura Wars 3 translation in the works, and... one's been translated, and hopefully two will be at some point. So, yeah, I reckon they'll do it.
That'd be good. I've got both, so I've got 3 and 4, so to be able to play them properly. I hear that the gameplay itself is fairly easy to grasp, but it's the visual novel sections in between that are difficult to get your head around, so which is fair. All right, well, we're going to start with probably the biggest game from this year, and that's Jason's pick. So, Jason, tell us, what did you choose?
Just squeezing into the UK in 2002, it was Res.
Excellent. A game that never came out in America, of course, on the Dreamcast. So it was an EU exclusive. I think it came out roughly the same time in Japan, if I'm thinking correctly. But yeah, Rez, big game. Tetsuya Mizuguchi. What made you choose Rez? What do you like about Rez the most?
I quite liked how different forward thinking it was at the time. As you say, Mizuguchi and the team kind of really put a central overload of a video game at me. And I think that's what makes it sticks out to me so much. Mm. You know, even like the storyline of a hacker infiltrating a malfunctioning AI system and you're trying to defeat viruses and firewalls to bring it back in line. It was so interesting to me. And especially at the time, because I was very much into PCs and the internet and multiplayer games at the time. And it kind of highlighted the problems that the internet might give us in at the time and into the future with viruses and all this kind of stuff. But when it was released, it kind of automatically was attracted to me because of the soundtrack as well. I was very much into trance and house music. So knowing that it had that kind of soundtrack in there, I was very much attracted to that game. And just with the visuals and the soundtrack together, and like with the visuals itself, like with it being kind of quite 80s, would you say? Kind of like it harkened back to some of the 80s kind of video games.
Almost like Tron as well. It's got a bit of a Tron vibe.
Yeah, Tron. It was just the mesh of those two is just mind-blowing to me at the time. And like even now when if someone was to ask me of like a top 10 game, you know, Rez would instantly come to my brain because it just left that kind of effect on me when I played it. And I just, with the soundtrack as well, I think what else I really loved about that was how it built up really slowly. You know, as you defeated the enemies, it was like, you know, just one notes. And as you got further into the levels, it just built up more and more and more. And it felt like you was making the music as yourself as you were playing the game. So I think just all those different things together just really make it the game of the year for me.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think I'd agree with all that. I think Mizuguchi had a real way with, I mean, it's the whole synesthesia thing, right, that he's going for, and he's done it with a few of his games. I mean, I don't know if anybody else has played Every Extend Extra Extreme or Lumens or anything like that, but those kind of games... Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, they're very different from Rez, but they kind of, especially Every Extend Extra, gives a very similar vibe. But yeah, absolutely, with the music especially. But yeah, Rez is absolutely fantastic. Who else has some cool things to say about Rez? I don't know why I said cool. Any things to say about Rez?
Yeah, I'd agree pretty much with everything that's been said already. It's just one of those games that just exudes coolness, doesn't it? It's almost like... Rez is like to Dreamcast as Wipeout is to PlayStation. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's so unique. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it went to other consoles as we mentioned earlier on. But you see that and you're just like, what is this? You see a screenshot of it and it makes you want to know more. It makes you want to like investigate more. I can remember it for me. It's got a very similar vibe to something like Tempest 2000 on the Jaguar. When I saw that game in screenshots, I was like, what is that? I need to play it. I need to find out what that's about. Same with Rez. It's like, it's with this wireframe, such a stunning visual style. Some of the boss fights, some of the boss encounters are absolutely mind-blowing. There's one which is like a big sort of octopus squid type thing. And to see it in motion is just, if you know, back in the day, back in 2002, seeing that was just like, what the hell is this? You know? Unbelievable. I am a big fan of this game, and I can't really sing its praises highly enough, to be honest. Again, visuals, soundtrack, the controls are a bit sort of Panzer Dragoon-ish. So even the mechanics are quite similar. You hold down the button to check to, like, you know, target several enemies and let go to fire several shots at once. But it's a triumph of visual design and just, you know, creativity, I think.
Very true, very true.
I think it's one of those really, like, artistic games. You know, it's a game that you don't play, you experience it. You know, like that kind of... But it is in a way. Yeah. Like, you're kind of... I suppose there is obviously gameplay, and it, you know, it can get quite hard if you're not, like, paying attention. But it is, you do kind of almost drift through this kind of experience. And also, like... it's one of those games where it's kind of stood the test of time, because it while it may not look like, you know, as visually kind of graphically intense as, say, like Shenmue or something, like, it has the kind of visual flair that kind of makes it kind of stand the test of time, even though it is a game from, you know, 2002. I do actually want to ask the guys, though, like, do you remember this coming out for the Dreamcast? And, like, I don't know, is it kind of a bit sad that it came out in 2002 and potentially got kind of ignored? Or, like, because it just seems a bit late for such a, you know, what you'd call such a important Dreamcast game. I don't know. Does anyone, like, remember when it came out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember it coming out. I mean, by this point, as I said earlier, I didn't have a Dreamcast anymore. And when I rebought one, Rez was like, you never really saw it in shops, because there just wasn't anything for Dreamcast in the shops. Mm. So I played it later, but I do definitely remember seeing it even in the multi-format mags like Edge, etc., where it was being raved about. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was ported to PS2 like not that long after, presumably.
Mm. It was pretty quick, I think, actually. Yeah, I think they because they knew that the Dreamcast was over. Pretty much they went straight to work on porting it, if I remember rightly. And there was supposed to be a Res 2 actually going to be developed, but they had to ditch that because of what happened with Sega. So, yeah, we never got Res 2.
At least the PS2 version didn't have the experience of the vibrating rumble pack with the beat of the music.
Oh, yeah. Come on, that was amazing.
In the Dreamcast one.
Oh, I love that. It's like super aggressive, but that was, to this day, I think that's probably the most satisfying experience I've had with, like, force feedback in a game. It's incredible what a good job it does. I mean, this is like getting pre-HD rumble, but it kind of evokes that feeling.
Did you guys ever see this was quite some time ago now, probably about seven or eight years ago, one of the guys who used to be on the DreamPod, a guy called Scott, who lives in Australia, he actually created he called it the Dream Trance. It was basically two Dreamcast jump packs wired together. And you could sort of have one in the control pack. You have one in the controller. You could have this other one, which you were meant to put it under a cushion and sit on it, so you could feel the vibration in your hands and your arse. I imagine. And he even stained it black and made like a little sort of actual box for it with a logo and everything with Dream Trance written on. And he sent it to me. I did a video review on the Dreamcast Junkyard blog. I've still got it. It's up in the attic in a box. But it was just a nice little trinket that he just created. There's only one of them in the world and I have it. So
Nice.
Did you just do a written review of it, Tom, or did you do a video review?
No, it was a video, yeah.
It was a video review. Okay.
did anyone ever play... I want to say it's called Garden of Eden, but I don't think that's the name. Eden or something?
Child of Eden.
Child of Eden.
Yeah,
Kinect.
That's the sequel, isn't it? Yeah.
Like, that was one of the few Kinect games that I actually thought was kind of cool. Like, and, you know, I guess it explains it that it was the guy who made Rez, so... Yeah.
I do think that Rez had an impact, or certainly an influence, on things like Cosmic Smash, which are very much in this, I think, set, if not in the same universe, they're very similar visually.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, there you go. It's an incredibly interesting game. And not to try and plug my own thing in here, but we did have a fairly extensive section on it in Lock On Volume 3, as you might remember. And in fact, Rich wrote a retrospective on Rez. Which is, and obviously you very much enjoyed that game, Rich. If your retrospective is anything to go by anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I love Rez. I mean, I probably am horrifically wrong, but for me, this was like kind of the first example I saw of kind of a slice of game as art. I look at games nowadays, you've got things like Abzu, which I love. I look at Rez being kind of obviously precursor to that. I'm sure there were games before it, but that was the first time I saw a game that almost kind of did away with the narrative and just focused on the actual experience. And, you know, it's a beautiful game. I still love playing it today. I've got it on the Quest VR as well, which is an amazing experience if anyone's not played Rez VR yet. So, yeah, incredible. Incredible game.
Yeah, it's nice that you mentioned that. I had it on the PS4 with the PS4 VR. Amazing experience, yeah. It's really cool. You can just kind of look around and, like, target things.
I know.
Yeah. It's good. It gives you a bit of a neck ache after a while, but, you know.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning.
I remember during COVID. Like, remember when PS4 and I think a few other companies did this, where they gave out free games for people. Yeah. And one of them was Res. You could get Res for free, the VR one. And it's like, I hope everyone downloaded that, you know. I wonder if people just like looked at it and were like, I don't get it. What is it? You know.
More than probably.
Yeah. In greats.
Just bring it to the Switch as well. I'd love to have it on Switch.
The Labo.
Yeah. But yeah, it's an incredible game, and you know, if you haven't read it yet, please read Volume 3, because there's a story where Simon Cox reveals how the game was named, which I think is a pretty awesome article with Tetsuya Mizuguchi. Sorry for the plug there, I'll stop plugging things now. So, Res, was it a game changer, was it a game, or was it a bit shit? Tom?
Oh, game changer, 100%.
Easy, that was an easy one. Lewis?
Yeah, I mean, like, probably in the wider sphere of games, maybe not so much, but, like, I think just as for what it is, it's a game changer.
Okay, cool. Jason?
Oh, yeah, game changer, easy.
Easy game changer. Rich, what about you?
Big old game changer for me. And the other thing I was going to say is there's that bit, I think, early on in the game where you encounter that big, like, golden sphere. And it always reminds me of the opening titles, The Brass Eye, which makes it a massive game changer, in my opinion. So, yeah.
I've never heard Res compared to Brass Eye before. But there you go. It's the first time for everything. Yeah, I agree. Game changer it is. Absolutely incredible game. Yeah. And I think you mentioned earlier about it being first kind of experience game that you'd seen with, like, you know, with other examples being Abzu. And it does remind me, for some reason, Journey always comes to mind when I think of Res. I get the same kind of feelings that I got from Res as I do in Journey. So, yeah, absolutely agree on that point too. All right. I'm going to move next to Lewis. And Lewis, what have you chosen for your 2002 game?
So I chose Cannon Spike, which is kind of one of them games that, you know, there's a lot of games like these on various retro consoles where maybe perhaps kind of most of its notoriety is like just the fact that it's really expensive secondhand, and I don't know if it's a product of the fact that Japan and America got this in 2000, but we in PAL territories got it in 2002 by Big Ben Interactive. And I wonder if perhaps people who couldn't get this version like went and got the others and that they all just went up in price. But anyway, but yeah, it's one of those games that obviously people do try and get because it is a Capcom game, and obviously Capcom and the Dreamcast are like, you know, hand in hand, you know. And this one's like, for those who don't know, it's like a multi-direction shooter. It's kind of like Smash TV or more recently Xenocrisis. And it just puts a load of Capcom characters in this sort of post-apocalyptic shooting game. You've got like Cammy from Street Fighter, Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins, but rather coolly, it's not just like the little dude in a like knight armor. He's actually in a giant golden robot. And you got like BB Hood from Darkstalkers, Mega Man, Charlie from Street Fighter Alpha, and then there's like a few like original characters. But yeah, you literally just like ride around on like rollerblades. One's on a skateboard, BB Hood is on a scooter, and you're basically zooming around these like arenas shooting the shit out of evil robots, and it's, you know, kind of fast-paced, mindless fun. But the one thing I find kind of weird about it, kind of refreshing myself with it recently, was it's like basically a twin stick shooter, but one, it isn't compatible with the twin stick, and like it has a really like weird kind of control for how you aim. So there's like a lock-on button, but it feels kind of slippery, so you'll target an enemy, it'll lock on, and then when you move too much, it's almost like the game forgets who you're targeting, and it like just stops. Also, another weird thing, and this is like kind of a product of its time, is the same stick you use to move is also what you use to turn round as well. So, like, you'll be trying to aim at an enemy, and you'll just end up like running away from them. So, yeah, definitely try the arcade stick if you want to play this. As far as Capcom games on the Dreamcast, it's like kind of middle of the pack, but it's also kind of worth playing, but don't pay £300 for it. There you go. That's sorry, that was quite long-winded, but there you go. Cannon Spike.
Lovely. I can't claim to have played this game. I've heard about it and read about it, but I've never played it. Tom, I'm guessing you've probably played this.
Yeah,
at some point.
I have played it. And just to reiterate what Louis says there, if you do spend £300 on this, I would say that you will have a very severe case of buyer's remorse after the fact. Yeah. If you're buying it to play, that is. I've got to say, I'm not a big fan of this game. I just find it a bit lightweight, if that's the right term. It's very repetitive. It's like you move to a new arena, you've got all these enemies just coming at you, and it's just rinse and repeat. And I know that's the style of game. I get that. I get it's an arcade game. But it's just not something that I would spend any real amount of time playing. I do remember the first time I played it, I didn't really know a lot about it. So when I fired it up and I saw that Mega Man was a playable character, I was a bit sort of taken aback. I was like, that's weird. Didn't know he was in it. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Zombie Revenge.
Yeah.
It's very similar visually, I find. Mm-hmm. You're kind of in these urban environments with hordes of enemies, and then you come to a boss fight. And I just remember like hammering the special attack. You know, like in Streets of Rage where you press the special attack and it goes back to the beginning of the stage and you get that guy in the police car, fires a bazooka. You've got like these sort of overpowered kind of special attacks that you can call on, if I remember rightly. And I just remember doing that a lot to try and clear enemies out off the screen. So, yeah. And as Lewis said to as well, controls are not the best, so it's... Yeah, I don't want to just sit here and slag off Lewis's choice of game, but it's not one that I enjoyed particularly.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to bring it up as an example of like a Capcom game, like from this year, and perhaps maybe as a sign that, you know, things are coming to an end, because I don't know if this is the best of the bunch.
I mean, Capcom did, obviously, as we all know, were one of the most impressive, and just they've just knocked it out of the park, didn't they, with so many Dreamcast releases, but some of them were a bit... Was the Spawn game by Capcom?
Yeah.
Was it? And was Heavy Metal Geomatrix by Capcom as well? Yeah. See, there were some that were like that kind of were almost, for me, almost like second-tier games. The other one that I spring to mind is Technomancer. So you've got your tier A games, and then you've got your B tier games. And for me, this is one of it slots nicely into that sort of section.
Just if you want to play a good Capcom game, play Power Stone. But, you know, it's half like I don't know how much it is these days. Probably like £50 million, but like it's probably cheaper than this. So and also like all the Big Ben releases have like really low quality printing. You could really tell less effort was being taken at this point. I think in Mike's A to Z book he says, you know, if your copy of Cannon Spike looks too good, it's probably fake. So.
Oh dear. Jason, is this a game you've played at all?
I love the idea of Cannon Spike, using all these different characters from different Capcom games and like chucking them into one game. And that's something that kind of intrigued me to want to play it. I didn't play it at the time, but I played it, since I've had the GDMU in my Dreamcast. And I played it for a bit. Like it's been mentioned before, the controls kind of put me off. I couldn't really get on with them that well, so it was kind of I've had a go at that, and I'll go off to play something else. So I was a little bit disappointed. Like I said, I love the idea of the game. I love the mashup of the characters, and you know, kind of Smash TV kind of a game. And I love Super Smash TV on the Super Nintendo. So yeah, I was well up for it. But yeah, a little bit disappointed because of the controls. But Lewis, I do like you've chosen a game that is apparently the last game that was released for the Dreamcast in Europe.
One of, I think, if according to Wikipedia anyway, it's one of five games that released the same day.
So two questions. One is, what were the others? And the other one is not really a question, but I'd love to know what the official sales figures were for those games on that particular day. Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
That would be very fascinating. I will tell you what the games are. I was going to come to this actually, and I wanted to find out your opinion. Before I do that, let me just check if Rich has played this first. Have you played this, Rich?
I have, yeah. I only played in the last couple of years. It was one of those things I obviously gave a go because I had the GDMU and obviously I was overindulging on the Dreamcast library. It was all right for the most part. I mean, nothing really jumped out to me. I did like Kami's in it. I'm quite a big Kami fan from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't obviously love the music of Kylie Minogue as well. So, you know. and, yeah, it was fine. It was a good, like, 20-minute blast, which I think that's what it took me to complete it. Nothing I'd really go back to, but I liked it. I thought the controls actually were okay. I like the visual style on it. I don't think it's a bad game. But, yeah, not something I'd go back to. I mean, it kind of had the longevity of, like, Dynamite Cop, but without the campiness and amazing brilliance of Dynamite Cop. So, yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Fair enough.
I think what Rich said about Dynamite Cop, if this game had a bit more sort of whimsicalness to it, like a bit sort of silliness, like the only thing that kind of remotely made me chuckle was there's like this one boss that's like these three like Gundam looking mechs, and for some reason they're called Rick Blue, Ken Brown, and Rob Green.
Didn't he play for Norwich?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a game changer for anybody, right? I think, are we saying this is a game? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Before we continue, though, Andrew, you're gonna have to put me on my misery. I want to know what the
I was gonna get to that. I'm assuming we're all saying game then, so I can move on to the five games. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, game.
Nobody's
game,
saying it's shit. No.
Not
shit. Okay. No, it's not shit.
No.
Fair enough. Just don't pay £300 for it.
Exactly.
Is what we're saying here. All right, so the five games. Now, this is Wikipedia, bear in mind, and this might be completely wrong, and these dates might be out a little bit. I mean, when I was doing Dreamcast Year 1, I had to look at like three or four different sources to make sure these are right. But according to Wikipedia, at least, five games released on April the 26th, 2002, and they were the last games to release in Europe. And those games were Cannon Spike, obviously, Conflict Zone, Evil Twin Cyprian's Chronicles, Heavy Metal Geometrix, and Razor Freestyle Scooter. I mean, we're not mentioning any of the other games in this, so if we were to say we've got these five games, if you were to pick one of those five games as the best last game in Europe, which of those five games would you pick?
I'm gonna stick my neck out here and say Conflict Zone.
Okay. Interesting. Any reason why? Yeah.
Because the Dreamcast doesn't really have anything to compare to Command & Conquer, and that's about as close as you can get, so it's a good game. Cyprian's Chronicles is just awash with like slowdown, and it's just not a very good 3D platformer, and the other games we've kind of discussed already, so yeah, I'd go for Conflict Zone just for pure longevity of a campaign, really. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Rich, what would you go for?
I actually probably would say Cannon Spike, because I've not really played much of any of the other games, so...
Fair, that's fair. Jason?
No, I'd agree with Rich for exactly what you said. I'd probably go for Cannon Spike, just because of what I said a minute ago, like it would just intrigue me too much with that mashup of different characters from different Capcom games, and I haven't really played any of the games, so, that's what I'll choose.
Makes sense. Lewis, what would you choose?
He's already chosen.
No, I was going to say probably Razor Freestyle Scooter. Actually, like it's basically a Tony Hawk clone. Like, what can go wrong, really? Other than the fact it's on scooters, but yeah, that's my choice.
It's actually Razor Freestyle Scooter.
Yeah, probably. It does have a plot where like scooter kids have to save their friend from a giant robot. That is, you know, Cannon Spike doesn't have that.
Although there are giant robots in Cannon Spike, so there is that similarity to be drawn.
And there's scooters, actually, because BB Hood rides one. So, yeah. A lot of scooters were released on that in games that day.
Okay. I'm sure I heard this game was terrible. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but it's a Tony Hawk clone, and so it's kind of like, I don't know, it can't objectively be terrible if it's just,
I've only played it briefly.
There were lots of terrible Tony Hawk games, though, weren't there?
Oh yeah, shit. Shut up, Andrew. But
oh dear.
This was the good era for Tony Hawk.
I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, I've never played Heavy Metal Geometrix. Was that okay? Was that a decent game?
Good soundtrack.
Yeah.
I just think it's a bit like Frame Grind. It's more like a weapons-based kind of arena shooter type thing.
The camera on it is pretty hideous, though. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
Heavy metal is a really big sort of well-known franchise, isn't it? Weird.
Fair enough. Alrighty. Let's move on from that tangent there. And Rich, I've got you up next. What game have you chosen for 2002?
This is an interesting one because it's not really a genre I ever really dabble with, but it would be Ikaruga.
Interesting. Of course, that came out in Japan only, is that right? So it was a Japanese release in 2002.
That's true, yeah. I'm being a bit of a elitist, so, you know. Yeah. I only play Japanese games, guys, you know. Orange swirls and all that jazz.
What made you choose this game, then?
So in all honesty, I'm probably as much of a fan of your sort of typical bullet hell shmup as I am, like, turn-based JRPGs, minus the seething hatred. It's probably a lot to do with the fact that these games I usually find to be incredibly bloody difficult. And despite Ikaruga kicking my ass over and over again, I think what appealed to me was how, in all essence, it's basically more of a puzzle game than it is just a standard shmup. What makes this one so different is that it requires you to switch the polarity of your ship between black and white, so attacks on enemies are even more or less effective depending on what mode you're in, and also in terms of your defense, that has an effect as well. So for instance, you can turn your ship black and your shield and your weapons are black, so if you're hitting white enemies with it, it's more effective. Whereas obviously on the receiving end, if an enemy is white and they hit you, one, you're in a white state, bear with me here, this is really confusing, the attack won't really have any effect, but you can basically absorb the attack and use it to basically power up your offense, so you can almost like supercharge your next, you know, projectile, as it were, as you will. It's, yeah, a really, really weird game. I am absolutely shockingly shit at it. I've only got maybe a few levels in. I know there's only like 5 levels, so I've not completed this game. Surprise, surprise. But I just really bloody enjoy it. It looks fantastic, sounds fantastic, and I've not really had any experience with any other games in the genre. But it just sang about this one that has kind of hooked me. I still can't quite tell what it is. I just find it incredibly fun, and how it is more cerebral instead of just clearing the screen of enemies like a lot of the other like bullet hell games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more strategic in terms of who you attack, who you avoid, stringing chains together. And it's just a lot of it's based on timing as well. You have to be in the right mode to attack certain enemies instead of just shoot them all. You have to use your brain, which is quite odd for a shooter. So it's just very unique game, and I know it's got quite a following. It's obviously come out in other formats since. I know it's on Steam. I know it came to like PS4, and obviously it's come to Switch as well, so a lot of people seem to love it, and I think it's really, really cool.
Awesome. Lewis, is this one you've played?
So I've never actually played this on Dreamcast. I did play it once, though, at Bury Arcade Club. They had, I don't know if it was like an original cabinet for it, but they had, you know, the means to play it there, set up. And I think I need more time with it, because I tried playing it and I found it, like, incredibly difficult. Like, I do appreciate the whole thing with, like, the light and dark, and, you know, you can avoid certain bullets with, you know, when you change modes. I thought that was really clever. The thing is, though, with like a game like that, is I feel like it's one where you have to like really be watching every sort of inch of the screen, and need to have your reactions on point as well. So it's one I think would require a lot of like mastering, but I imagine like once you've when you get to the point where you've mastered this game, it's like really rewarding. And I could definitely understand why people like it. It's like a really stunning game visually. I need to give it a go on Dreamcast. I have no excuse. I've got it on the GDMU ready to play, so I'll just hopefully it's compatible with the arcade stick, because I reckon that'd be pretty cool to use to play this.
Maybe fire it up after we finish this this episode. Yeah. There you go. Jason, is this one you've played?
It was quite attracted to it because of it being vertical instead of just being the normal horizontal way in which the shoot 'em ups are normally chosen. I enjoyed the shooting scheme that Rich has described beautifully. But
Come on now.
You're too kind.
Yeah, but just like what's been said before, you know, with it being brutally hard, a bit of a love-hate relationship with shoot 'em ups. I think they've really got to be, I don't know, they've really just got to kind of grab me. And I think with the difficulty level of this game, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of good. I'll go and play something that I can actually be good at. So I think at the time that I played it, I think I was a bit of a lazy gamer, and I didn't really try to stick with it and try and practice to get better at a game. I was a bit of a lazy gamer. So I think if I went back and played it now, I think I'd probably give it a bit more of a chance. So I think that's something I should probably do.
Tom, have you played Ikaruga?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, there's nothing really I can add that the other guys haven't mentioned already. But just as Rich said, very interesting sort of mechanic with the different polarities, light and dark. And again, as Jason said, the difficulty level is a real stumbling block for me. I find it to be a very hard game, especially when they introduce the environmental hazards into the game as well. You've got things sort of moving around and you've got to dodge that and also switch polarities at the same time. It's too cerebral for me. I just don't. I think I'm a bit too thick for it, to be honest. So, but I can appreciate the you know how inventive and how original it is for the genre. I'm not one of these people who completely just writes off shmups or shooters, because I'm going to talk about one later on that I do really like. But Ikaruga is one that I can sort of play for about 20 minutes and then get annoyed with and sort of stop playing it. So, yeah. Good game, though.
Okay. Good game, but would we say it's a game changer or just a game?
I'm going to go game.
Game. Fair enough. Lewis?
I'd probably go, like, strong game, because I do know how much people love this game. I mean, like has been mentioned, like, the amount of systems it's been ported to. So strong game.
Strong game. Okay. Jason?
Yep, game.
Game for you as well. Okay. And Rich, what would you say?
I mean, yeah, even though it's my pick, I'm still going to go with a real good, strong game. It didn't change anything for me. It's not, like, you know, influential, but yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, I've never played it, so I don't have much of an opinion, so I will just say game as well. I just, yeah, not much else I can say about it, is there really? Fair enough. Let's move on to Tom's pick. Tom, what have you picked for 2002?
Okay, yeah, so my pick is a bit of a 180 from the games that the other guys have chosen, but I've gone for NHL 2K2, which is the first showing for a sports game on this episode. I'm going to say up front, I'm not really a big fan of the real-world NHL. I don't really know a great deal about it. However, through sort of cultural osmosis over the years, I kind of learned certain players, all the different teams in the NHL, from playing the first sort of EA Sports and EA Hockey games on the Mega Drive, going all the way up. Even still to present day, I still play the odd NHL game on the current gen systems, but no real hardcore interest in the real world sport. The NHL games on the Dreamcast, though, really sort of grabbed my attention, because I'm a big fan of football, or soccer for our American listeners. Famously, the Dreamcast didn't really have a very, you know, it didn't have a blockbuster soccer title. Some all right ones, but nothing on the level of like PES or FIFA. So the next best thing for somebody like me was a game like ice hockey, which is essentially football on ice. You got two goals and some outfield players and goalies, and you got to get a thing in a net. So obviously gravitated towards that. Luckily, the two NHL games on the Dreamcast are absolutely awesome. And it's the second of these, NHL 2K2. They missed 2K1 for some reason, not sure why. But yeah, NHL 2K2 is just, for me, probably the pinnacle of sports or team sports games on the Dreamcast. It's also, incidentally, the last game that was released in the United States, the very last officially released game. And what a way to go, go out on a high with one of the best sort of digital representations of hockey that you can get. Why is it so good? Well, where do I begin? The graphics, obviously at this point the Dreamcast was up against the PS2, So it wasn't up against the N64 PlayStation anymore. It was up against the sort of true next-gen consoles. This game really holds its own against things like NHL 2000 from 2001 from EA Sports. Just the amount of detail in the game, the reflections on the ice, the crowds, the ice spraying up from the ice hockey players' skates. Even things like the presentation, you know, the colour commentary, the transitions between camera angles, the action replays when you score a goal. You know, you've got like a, you know, I'd never seen a camera angle from inside the goal before with the, you know, with the real sort of fisheye lens. It was just mind blowing. So yeah, it was just a really good team sports game. And again, repeating myself, but it filled the void that the sort of lackluster football games left. So yeah, NHL 2K2 really is my pick, and I don't know how many of the other guys have played it, but if you haven't, it's well worth checking out because it's a bit of a spectacle in my opinion.
Was it Was it one you could play online? Was it one of the online sports games?
Don't believe so. No, I think it was. That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think it was. I don't see any online options in the main menu.
Okay.
So I don't think it is, but yeah, obviously four-player enabled. You could play like couch co-op. Not that I have, because I don't know anyone else who wants to play a 20-year-old Dreamcast hockey game with me. But yeah, it's just great. You put it on and you're just like, is this really a 20-year-old game? Look at the presentation. Listen to the commentating. Look at the gameplay as well. Obviously, is second to none. Otherwise, I wouldn't have chose it. It does literally play like one of the old Mega Drive hockey games. You know, you've got your pass, you got your shoot, you've got your deke, which is like basically hoofing it up the rink. And then, yeah, you've got all the checking, the body checking. Everything feels like it's got a lot of weight to it. All the players feel they've got a real presence on the ice. You know, when you smash into somebody, you really are body checking them, which again adds to the realism. It's just the whole package. And if you are a fan of NHL from this period and you want to see all the stats and all the lineups, and you know, you want to get involved in all the management, you can do that because there's a full sort of season mode. There's all the competitions that you could want. But just as a sort of a pick-up-and-play ice hockey game, it literally cannot be beaten on the Dreamcast because there's only two hockey games. NHL 2K2 is the better of the two, I think, in my opinion. It's really hard to score, but you need to really work on that. And as a really sort of odd side note, 2K2 was developed by Treyarch, who then went on to obviously create the Call of Duty games, or be involved heavily in the Call of Duty games, even still to this day. So it's a bit of a change around from ice hockey to Call of Duty.
Very interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Also, your statement about not having anybody to sit down and play the game with makes me very sad, and also makes me think that we should all be... I mean, you've not got anybody there to play. You've got an entire community here, an entire kind of bunch of online mates who'd play that with you. So at some point, we all need to get together.
Definitely.
With a Dreamcast and play all these multiplayer games together, maybe on video.
I could quite easily sort of force my long-suffering partner into coming and playing with me, but she will probably die of boredom within about 3 seconds, especially with me ranting at her in her ear about how good the Dreamcast was and it should never have died so soon.
Well, I think we should just all get together at some point and do a live Dream Pod together and play games.
Me and That's Rich only did that the other week, didn't we, mate? Had a bit of a Dreamcast multiplayer session.
We did. Yeah, that was quite emotional there.
Yeah, for the first time in about 20 years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. I think I need to tell this story as well. So yesterday was Southampton Pride, and I went down there with a Dreamcast T-shirt on, and literally within about 5 minutes of being there, I was at one of the bars, and I seen a guy with a Space Channel 5 T-shirt. I was like, mate! And he was like, mate! Like, aww. It was quality.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but, yeah, that was really, really good. So yeah, NHL 2K2. Interested to hear if anybody else has played it. Sorry, Andrew, I'm doing your job, aren't I?
That's right. I'm interested to hear if anybody else has played this. Lewis, have you played this?
I've not, unfortunately. I probably would enjoy it. It's just, I don't know what it is. I think as like a capital G gamer TM. When you hear, like, when you see a sports game, you're like, ugh. I don't know, it just passes you by, like, you know, and probably if I booted this up, I'd quite enjoy it. You know, I've enjoyed sports games from this era before, like NBA stuff, you know, and I'm sure I'd like this. I just need to just give it a chance. And yeah, so did you play this back in the day, Tom, considering it was like an American release? Or
no, I didn't. I was aware of it because I played 2K, the first game, when it was, because that was the only one that was released on PAL.
Right.
So 2K2 obviously was quite a late release, and it was only several years after I you know, started recollecting Dreamcast games that I got this. And it was really cheap as well. I don't know how expensive it is now, but it was one of those games that you just get. It was just like a fiver, you know, sealed. Nobody wanted it, you know, so I don't know.
Jason, have you played this one?
No, unfortunately not. I haven't played it either. I used to love the NHL games on the Mega Drive. I remember playing those with my friends for hours upon hours, but I think as the years went by, I kind of just kind of lost interest in playing sports games. And I don't know whether that was because I just lost interest in them or because I was crap at them. So maybe a bit of both, I don't know. But I think by the time the Dreamcast came around, I just had no interest in playing sports games anymore. So I never really played any of them. And even to this day, I mean, I've played a bit of FIFA with my children, which I tried to ignore as well because they're better than me. But, so I don't want to go through my GDEMU menu. It's not a game that I would pick to play either. So yeah, just not one I've experienced, unfortunately.
It's a shame. Rich, I feel like I know where this is going to go. Have you played NHL 2K2?
I've dabbled, actually. Yes. Yes, I have.
Excellent.
Yeah, I like it. I've never really been too drawn towards hockey games. I don't know why. I mean, I do like my sports titles, even though I'm not like a sporty person. Love me a soccer game. I like playing NFL games, even though I don't know what the fucking rules are, but hey. And yeah, the thing about hockey games, I don't know what it is. Something doesn't click with me. It's the pace of the gameplay, and like what Tom said earlier about how it's so incredibly hard to score. I don't think I've ever actually ever scored in any ice hockey game I've ever played. So it gets to the point where I'm just like, well, why am I playing this? I can't do the one thing I need to do.
Yeah.
I'd end up just having fights on the ice. It's more fun.
I mean, ice hockey is very niche, even in this country. It's extremely it niche. Is. So, and an it ice is. Hockey game on the Dreamcast is like 10 levels deep of niche. So, or niche, sorry for our American listeners.
Niche-y. but yeah, in terms of like the actual overall package, I do rate this game highly in terms of the presentation. The 2K games at the time were so damn important, and they, you know, they live on today.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, they do.
Born out of EA being a bunch of bastards. So yeah, we have them to thank for that. But yeah, what I've played, I like it enough, but I just don't think it's a sport for me. I've never really found it translates in a way to gaming that's really ever appealed to me, but I like what I played for the most part.
Fair enough. So, is this going to be a game changer or a game, or is it going to be a bit shit, Lewis?
A game, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it, but from what I've heard, from what Tom said, and it sounds like a really good NHL game, so I would stay a game.
Yeah, lovely. Rich, what about you?
I tend to want to say that anything under the 2K banner is kind of a game changer in of itself, but yeah, for me, this is still just a game.
It's a game. Tom, how about you?
Yeah, no, that's all very fair as well. I think it's a strong game. As alluded to earlier, this series on the Dreamcast was a sort of is Genesis the right word? It was the sort of the start of the 2K games franchise, which obviously still exists today with, like, you know, 2K games was essentially born out of this series. So yeah, strong game, I think. Yeah,
awesome. I was going to joke and say I thought this was shit, but you've convinced me that maybe I should try it, which is weird, so I can't really say that anymore.
I was also very careful to say team game as well, because I know things like Virtual Tennis are like probably superior sports games, especially because they're more pick up and play and more people can relate to tennis, but as a sport game, as a team game, for me, this is way better than things like the baseball games and the NFL games. So,
okay, well, there we go. There's our four games from 2002 on the Dreamcast. We're not going to go into as much depth on the next four games. We're just going to kind of pass over them slightly. But, I mean, since there were so few games in 2002 for the Dreamcast, like I said, there was a bunch for Japan, but a lot of those you just wouldn't be able to play. Unfortunately, there are a lot of visual novels around this time. Since it's the last crossover episode, I figured, why not look ahead a little bit? And so I've asked each of the fleshbags to come up with a game that released for the Dreamcast after 2002 for us to have a little bit of a chat about. So just as long as it released on the Dreamcast, it doesn't have to be an official license release. It could be indie, it could be anything you want. So I'm going to start with you again, Jason. What game did you choose that came out after 2002?
I chose Flea.
Very good, very good. The Low Tech Games, lovely Alistair, who I've met a few times, lovely guy. What made you choose Flea?
I was first introduced to Flea at the Old Gaming event in April of this year. Wave Games were there with a few games to play, and I saw this game running on a TV screen. I was like, "What is this?" NES kind of looking game, and I went and had a play, and I was instantly hooked. To the challenge, you know, where I was saying earlier, I was a bit of a lazy gamer back in the day. Now I'm a bit more of a perseverance kind of a guy. You know, I really want to try and solve these puzzles and such. And Flea is the perfect game to try and do that with. Just the combination of the graphics and the ideas that they brought into the game just completely hooked me. And I don't know. I think like a sign of a good game is when it really gets you, and like you just really want to just keep trying and trying and trying to solve the puzzle or to complete the challenge. And Flea's got that in abundance.
Mm, absolutely. Of course, there's Tapeworm Disco Puzzle as well from the same developer, which is also on Dreamcast, which is very good. So, yes, it's a great pick. Has anybody else played Flea?
I've not, no.
I haven't either.
Lewis?
I own two copies of it, so I should have, and I have. But yeah, also check out Alistair Lowe's TikTok. It's really good if you're on TikTok.
Yes. He's very funny. He's great. And he had a game that he had on Kickstarter recently called Playhead, which I'm really hoping gets released at some point. Looks very good.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
So definitely go check out Low Tech Games. But yeah, Flea's certainly up there in the fact that you can play that. I mean, it's on the NES as well. You can get a NES cartridge to play on the actual NES. But it's on the Dreamcast too, of course. And in fact, I think it's on things like the Evercade as well. So it's a really successful indie title, all things considered. So definitely worth giving a go. Libis, what game did you choose?
Yeah, so continuing on with the indie theme... another one that Wave published over in Europe, Intrepid Izzy is my choice. I think I've waxed lyrical about it a few times. I think maybe I have like nostalgia goggles for it, even though like it was released last year, but being able to have like a review copy that was really kindly given to me and writing my review and that kind of excitement to share the love for Intrepid Izzy with the world as well, like when like, we put the review out was amazing, you know, and you know, the fact that a lot of people like seem to also love it as much as I do as well. And yeah, if you've not ever heard of this game, it's kind of like a Metroidvania-esque kind of game, but very charming and colorful and funny. And yeah, it's fantastic. It's really, really standout indie title.
Absolutely. And we had Daniel from Wave on a couple of episodes ago, I believe.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
we did. Mm. Lovely guy. And of course, Senile Team, who make Intrepid Izzy, fantastic. They did Beats of Rage as well, of course, and the whole engine that kind of started off the homebrew scene for the Dreamcast in many ways, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
They're like veterans, yeah.
They're royalty, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Everybody else here played Intrepid Izzy at all?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's a great game. I mean, we had Roll from Senile Team on the Dream Pods, oh God, when would it have been? Years ago. To chat about it. I mean, Intrepid Izzy wasn't, I don't think it was a thing then. We were talking more about like Rush Rally Racing and that kind of stuff. But yeah, very talented team over there, clearly. And yeah, as everything Lewis has said is, you know, comes, you know, is true, essentially. So yeah, it's great. Great game.
Rich, have you played this one?
I've played it. Not a lot, but what I've enjoyed it for the most part. It kind of reminds me of a lot of the older, I don't mean this in a shit way, I mean it's as a compliment, but it does remind me of some of these like end of the 90s, early 2000s flash-based games. Like, that's how it looks to me. But it really pops visually as well. Like, it really actually stunned me when I saw it on my 4K TV for the first time. Obviously, I know it's not 4K, but it looks really sharp, really clear, and just really lovely, clean visual style. It plays really, really nice. It didn't really, what I have played, it didn't really, like, you know, wasn't reinventing the wheel or anything, but yeah, a nice, fun little platformer. So,
excellent. I mean, Jason, I'm going to assume that you probably saw this at OLL as well, right?
I did, yes. I was very excited to see it because I'd heard such great things about it, but I'd never really had the opportunity to actually play it. So to see it there, I was, very excited. So I did play there and I did really enjoy what I played there. It's definitely my kind of game.
Lovely. Yeah, it's a very good game. I've got my PAL case copy, which I'm very pleased to have. Very cool, very good game, very colourful, like you say, Rich. It really pops on the screen, which is nice.
Didn't your review get like a quote on the back as well, Lewis?
Yeah, it did actually. Yeah.
Just drop that in. Yeah.
Humble brag.
But I think the original copies had a quote from Mike actually as well. So
yeah, they did.
Double junkyard there.
Lovely. Okay, Rich, going to come to you next.
Yes.
What's the game that you've brought that's released after 2002?
I'm going the following year, so I'm being a boring bastard, and I'm going to go with Dolphin Blue.
There you go. Actually, fairly recently released on the Dreamcast, because this is an Atomos Wave game, right? I think it was released in arcade the following year, if I remember rightly, but it was just that... So that probably will be why. But yeah, it's only fairly recently that they've been able to port the Atomos Wave games over. I think it was 2020, is that right, that they ported those over?
Yeah.
So yeah, very interesting game. I played a bit of this myself recently. What made you choose Dolphin Blue?
I mean, similar, like with Ikaruga in a way, kind of like a genre that I'd never really played, haven't really previously appealed to me. You know, your run and gun shooters. And I know people will say this is probably very similar to games like Metal Slug. I'll take their word for it because I haven't played Metal Slug. But I really, really like it. It's just fun. The animation's absolutely gorgeous. The way it plays, it's just really fluid and just nice, simple slice of gaming. There's not much to really think about. You just run and gun. You have a dolphin friend that you can use for attacks, which is a nice little touch. And yeah, it's just really, really great. I mean, I played it not long before we recorded, just as, you know, a bit of a refresher, blitzed through it in about 30 minutes. And just a really, really fun time. You know, it's not like hard as nails, and I'm one of these people that wouldn't necessarily do too well with these kind of games. I don't have very good reflexes. So, yeah. But, yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It looks fantastic. If you put it on your GDMU, please get the GDI version, not the CDI port, because there's a shitload of slowdown. And I realised that today when I still had the CDI version. So, yeah. Great game, though. Really, really worth it. Yeah, not much more I can say, really.
Fair enough. I think I've seen on Etsy at some point, I think I've seen repros of it with like a cool Atomos Wave cover that somebody's made, and I feel like that would be an awesome repro to get, considering it's not an official release. Anybody else played Dolphin Blue?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Same as Rich, played it on GDMU through the Atomos Wave emulation on Dreamcast. Yeah, again, great game. Very, very similar to Metal Slug. It was the detail in the animations, as you alluded to, that really kind of stuck out, and it's very much in that in that SNK sort of vein. So yeah, very visually appealing, and yeah, it's just a good fun shooter. Yeah, it's not very complicated. It's just hold the shoot button down, kill things.
Yeah, pretty much.
Love it. Yeah. Also, Hark's has echoes of a thing called In the Hunt, which is a sort of submarine-based Metal Slug-style game.
Jason, have you played this one?
No, unfortunately not. But something I will remedy very soon, as I'm currently downloading the GDI. So
there you go. Hey. There you go. Lewis, have you played Dolphin Blue?
Yeah, this was one of the Atomis Wave games, like back on the old Junkyard blog. There was like an article about, you know, games that were kind of locked to the Atomis Wave, and I always saw Dolphin Blue and thought, like, that looks so cool because I like Metal Slug, and just, you know, also Rich, play Metal Slug. Play three is the best one. But yeah, and so seeing this kind of like Metal Slug-esque game where, you know, with dolphins and it's all like very sort of ocean based is like, yeah, really cool. And I was not disappointed when I got to play it finally, thanks to the awesome job of the community who brought it to us, so hats off to them.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. And finally we have Tom's choice. What did you choose, Tom?
Yeah, last but not least, my choice comes from 12 years after our year 2014, and it is Stormwind from Duranic, which is a side-scrolling shmup shooter, sometimes vertical, sometimes horizontal. This was a, it kind of came out of nowhere, really. Well, no, I say no, let me qualify that. The indie scene wasn't very big back in 2014, not as big as it is now for the Dreamcast. And when this game appeared, the level of polish that it had was just completely off the scale compared to stuff like Ducks that had come before. So Stormwind, as I say, is a game by a very small team. Developer is known as Duranic, and it just had things in it that you just hadn't seen in indie games before. It had like achievements, unlockables, you could record replays, this really cool soundtrack, graphics that were like, wow, is this a current gen game? Because it looks that good. It does some very cool tricks with like pre-rendered backgrounds, with like the sprites kind of laid over them. Mm-hmm. But it all marries together really well. So you've got these like animated, almost like steampunk backgrounds. Everything's like sort of rotating and changing, and it's just really, this looks really, really good. Not so much on a VGA monitor or a HD TV, but if you play it on a CRT where it's a bit more fuzzy, it looks a lot better. Stormwind, just a really cool indie shmup with lots of features that you would expect from an officially released game that came pretty much from somebody without any real kind of chops in the Dreamcast world, if that makes sense. Mm. Life as an Atari Jaguar CD game called Native, but then it was ported over to the Dreamcast, and that's where main development continued. And there are some really cool little nods to that in the game, so you get things that like fall down in the background with like a Jaguar logo on it, that kind of stuff. But yeah, really, really cool. And it's got like a really interesting mechanic where the ship itself, the lives of the ship are based around the weapons that you've got. So if you get hit by a projectile while you're using a certain particular weapon, that weapon system gets knocked out, and then you have to rely on the other two. But you can build them back up again by collecting power-ups. So you're very much, you know, using your weapons as lives, and like maybe reserving the one that you think might be the best to use against the boss at the end of the level, rather than just like losing it near the beginning. So yeah, it's quite a tactical game as well. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, as I say, looks absolutely fantastic for an indie game.
Sounds very interesting.
Incidentally, re-released on the current gen systems about 2 years ago, I believe. So it's definitely on the Switch. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's on the PS4, 5 and the Xbox, but yeah, I think it's also on Steam now. So definitely worth checking out if you've not got the Dreamcast version.
Very cool. Has anybody else played this?
Yeah, I've played it for a bit. I really, really like it. Probably would have picked this if Tom hadn't, so...
A man of taste, I see.
Yeah. So I've not played a load, but yeah, no, I really liked what I played. I think it was probably one of the first, like... indies I actually played on the Dreamcast. It probably was the first game, so... Off to a good start. I always remember you guys talking about it. This is before I, you know, wasn't too savvy with the whole Dreamcast indie scene. Kind of opened up a new world, really. It's a fantastic little game I have played. It looks really, really nice. It's hard as balls, which is what you'd expect.
Good stuff. It kind of set the benchmark for indie games after that point.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you're not going to put this amount of like effort in, there's just no point.
Well, even the edition they released as well, like the plushy toy and everything like that. It's like they really went all out. They pushed a boat out for it, which is,
yeah, a good template to follow for other companies that are able to do so.
Yeah, I remember on the blog, one of the guys who was really right at the early days of the Dreamcast Junkyard blog, a guy called Aaron, or the Gaga Man, he would do these updates where he was like looking forward to it, and then it was like, oh, when's it coming out? You know, I want it. And then it was only years later that I actually played it myself for the first time, so I could, you know, it really kind of then dawned on me just how impressive it was back in the day in 2012. It was released, 2014. It was re-released in 2017 as like a re-release. So you can still get it fairly affordably, as far as I'm aware. So, yeah.
Nice. Very cool. Jason, have you played this one?
Unfortunately not, no. There's another one that kind of passed me by. But like another shoot 'em up, would you say it's, Tom, like in the same kind of vein of it as Ikaruga with the difficulty level, or was it a bit easier for on the eye-hand coordination?
It's very much easier, yeah. It's, I think, something like, do you remember the Thunder Force games on the Mega Drive? Kind of like that.
Okay.
It's more about the spectacle, and that it tries to wow you with every new with every new stage, because the backdrops and everything are so varied, and the environments that you end up sort of battling through. But it's not really on the same level as Ikaruga in terms of difficulty. Not a chance. No, you can essentially play it as a bit of a novice to these kind of games, if sure. you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know it's a bit of a love hate relationship with shoot 'em ups, but
I'm definitely
intrigued by this one. So I'll put it on wishlist for the Switch.
Lewis, have you played this one?
No, I haven't. Sorry, Tom, I've not played this.
Oh God.
Sorry.
No, I'm joking.
I do want to get it. It's like there's a few indie games that I hear all these great things about that I've got like a list of just needing to buy them, and this is obviously one of them. Like,
yeah.
I know very much that, Tom, you're a big fan of this, so I take your recommendations highly. So
thank you. You know,
yeah.
As everybody should. Yeah, I think this is one that I wouldn't mind buying. I think it's, is it Josh Prod who sells this one? Is that right?
Yeah, they've been involved in the re-release, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And then you can get things like, I think I always wanted to get, is it Volgar the Viking? Volgar the Viking.
Yeah,
I've heard that's pretty good. And I know they've re-released that recently as well. So there's just a bunch of indie games that, yeah, you can still get physically, which are well worth your time. And of course, Flea and Intrepid Izzy you can get too still, so.
If you are in sort of interested in getting Stormwind physically, just be aware that there's two different versions. There's the original version, which is from Red Spot Games. That's mm-hmm. that's the 2014 release, which obviously goes for a little bit more than the re-release from Josh Prod.
Oh, okay. Interesting to know.
Is the re-release, like, is it a better version, or is it just...
It's completely the same. It just doesn't have the red... I think they did have some... There was some friction with Red Spot Games, I believe. I don't know the exact ins and outs of what happened, but yeah, the re-release from 2017 just has all the Red Spot Games logos and everything removed from it. So,
okie dokie.
Drama.
Indeed, yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, we've talked about the games and some after 2002 as well. Please let us know on the Discord or on our Twitter which game from 2002 you like the most and which ones beyond that were your favourites. You can find our Discord by going to our Twitter or to the website. So the Twitter is at the DC Junkyard. And of course, the website is thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. If you don't know that, I don't know what to tell you. You should know by now. You're listening to the Dream Pod. It should just be obvious. Mm-hmm. How did you get here?
I think it was a good idea that we did this like little extra bit here, Andrew, because I feel like 2002 for Dreamcast, like we sort of alluded to earlier, sort of sad times, and looking ahead to what these games that we've just mentioned, you've got these indie titles, you've got a Thomas Wave games being like brought back into the conscious of, you know, the Dreamcast scene. It's, you know, it's a golden era, so we're back.
Very true. Like the golden years of Dreamcast years, we're back to it 20 years later, no less. So 20 years after the pretty much it was meager, slim pickings is the word I'd use in 2002 for Dreamcast owners. But 2022, plenty of games going around, isn't there? Loads coming out. Mike can't finish his book for all the games coming out. So yeah, it's crazy.
probably more games released this year than there was in 2002 for Dreamcast, probably. I don't know, maybe not.
It's probably true. I mean, definitely the last couple of years, probably that's true. It's crazy to think that that's the case, right? That in probably the last year of the Dreamcast's life, officially in America and Europe at least, there were less games than released 20 years later when the console is considered dead. That's
mad, yeah.
Odd thing to think about. There you go. All right, let's before we wrap up, let's do our traditional quiz, which I know Tom has been waiting for.
Oh yes, this whole time.
So as is tradition, we're going to end with a quiz, and this is the IMDb keywords quiz, shamelessly stolen from an IGN podcast. So if you think this is familiar, that's why. It's been a lot of fun in the past, so I've brought it back again, and essentially, all it is I'm going to read out 10 keywords listed for a game from the year 2002, a Dreamcast game from 2002, that are listed on IMDb to describe the story of the game. And each team, which is DreamPod and DCY, so that's Tom and Lewis versus Rich and Jason, they'll get one guess each as to what the game could be per keyword. And if the game is guessed on the first keyword, I'll award that team 10 points. And going all the way down to if it's guessed on the 10th keyword, you'll get just 1 point. Should there be a tie at the end of this, I do have a tiebreaker anagram, as is also tradition. Do we think we're ready for this?
Yeah.
Ready?
I'll just apologise now, Rich.
Sorry about it. Fine. We blitz this.
Yeah,
let's see where this goes. I know that DreamPod won last time, right?
Probably.
So Dreamcast years need to pull this out of the bag. All right, let's go. I mean, how hard could this be, really? There's only a few games this year, so let's see what's going on. Are we ready for the first?
They're all from 2002, yeah?
It's all from 2002, correct.
Okay, right.
Are they all PAL releases or worldwide?
They're worldwide.
All five PAL releases, yeah.
Is one of them going to be some like random visual novel that like no one knows?
I'm not giving anything away, you'll find out.
All right, okay.
All right, are we ready for the first keyword?
Yes.
So, first game, first keyword is Dolphin.
Mm.
We got a guess for anybody? Dolphin? One guess per team, remember.
It's not going to be Dolphin Blue, is it? Because it's not.
That's too obvious, isn't it, right?
Yeah. It's not Echo, because Echo wasn't released in 2002, was it? So.
Going to give you 5 seconds.
No, a pass, I think.
Go Dolphin Blue, just get the obvious one out of the way.
It's a guess, it's not Dolphin Blue.
Okay.
Second keyword is sword. Sword.
They're doing what to the dolphins? Swords and dolphins. Wow.
Mm. Any guesses?
It's not Blue Submarine thing, is it?
I don't think that came out in 2002, did it?
I don't know. Should we just go with that, just for the hell of it?
I'm stuck.
Same.
Yeah. Nothing from Dreamcast years then?
This is like a real shot in the dark, but I know there was a game that came out in 2002 that's based in an aquarium.
Okay.
And that's Ever 17, but I doubt it's that.
It is not that. It's not Ever 17.
That would have been sick if it was.
All right, keyword 3 is disease. Disease.
Oh, is it? It's not Illbleed, is it?
It's not Illbleed, no. Oh. That was your guess. Dreamcast years?
Sorry, Lewis.
So right, I didn't have anything anyway.
I was going to say, Spirit of Speed came out a few years earlier. So,
Ooh. No guesses from you guys?
Got me stumped.
I've got nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Okay, let's move on then. The fourth keyword is quest. Quest.
So we've got dolphin, sword, quest.
It's not dolphin quest, disease of swords, is it?
Disease of swords.
Nothing.
It's not 100 swords, is it?
It's not 100 swords, no.
Oh.
Okay, moving on to the fifth keyword. The keyword is egg. E-G-G, egg.
Is it? It's not Fantasy Star, no.
Is that your guess?
Yeah, version 2.
It's not, no.
Okay.
Dreamcast years?
God damn it, Lewis.
I can't even hazard a guess.
No.
Based on these, it would be a random game, which is, yeah, I
okay.
Generally don't know.
Okie dokie. I'll move on then. The sixth keyword is conspiracy. Conspiracy.
Mm. I bet it's people listening to this screaming, like I was when I was listening to this, the last ones. Dolphin conspiracy. Disease.
Remember, they get easier as we go as well, so they start hard and they get easier, so...
What year did Radagy come out, Tom? No, it's 2005. That's has conspiracies and diseases, but no dolphins.
Yeah, because it's a radio allergy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm. Any guesses, or shall I go with the next keyword?
I'm happy for you to do so if the other guys are
Yeah, please do.
We're working together at this point.
Seriously, I don't feel like competition anymore. Just...
the seventh keyword is runt. R-U-N-T, runt.
I'm completely stumped.
I think you might all get it on the last three. Definitely okay. The last one.
What's a relief.
Shall I move on?
Yeah.
The eighth keyword is talking animal. Talking animal.
Sea man.
Is that your guess?
No. Because there's no swords in that, is there?
That would have been an interesting turn. Yeah.
Talking animal.
Shall I move on to nine?
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Put you out your misery. The ninth keyword is based on a book.
Is it a book that anyone's read?
I mean, I can't tell you that. I'm not
What's
sure.
What's the name of the book? What's the name of the book, Andrew?
That might give it away. Shall I run through the clues that we've had so far?
Yeah, go on.
Pointless, really, but go for
Pointless,
it.
Pointless, but yeah. So we've got dolphin, sword, disease, quest, egg, conspiracy, runt, talking animal, based on a book. And we've still got one more to go, which should give it away if you want me to go to that one, but that's just 1 point if anybody just guess it.
Yeah, go on. Go for it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. 10th keyword is Dragon Rider.
Chronicles of Pern.
Yes.
Oh, bollocks.
Dragon Rider.
I accidentally started that game today. I was meant to play the Dolphin Blue and I selected it accidentally.
That's amazing.
Ah, shit. Oh, well.
God, that was hard. Was that 2005? Right? That's 2002, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of the final games released just before the five we mentioned earlier.
Wow, that was a good one.
I thought it was earlier than that.
So did I.
2002 in PAL. I'll just look at it now, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. 1 point then to the Dreamcast Junkyard, the DreamPod team. So it should be easy, hopefully, for the Dreamcast years to get it
first go. Next one.
Yeah. Should we move on to the next one?
Let's do it.
Yes.
All right. So the second game, first keyword, suspicion.
Nice. Is it? I'm going to go espionage agents.
No.
No.
Shall I go to the second?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Second keyword. Is dystopian future. Dystopian future.
Modern day Britain.
Yeah. But not in this case. No, that's not the right answer, unfortunately.
Suspicion and modern, what was it? Dystopian future.
Dystopian future, yeah. Shall I move on?
I mean, yeah, go on.
All right. Third keyword is big gun. Big gun. Didn't help, did it?
No. So, it could be something like, it's not Gundam 0079.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Bloody hell.
Dreamcast years, do you want to hazard a guess or shall I move on?
Move on. Unless Jason's got something.
Conflict Zone.
Conflict Zone?
It's a guess.
No, it's not Conflict Zone.
It's a good show, though. Good guess.
Yeah. You say that now, wait until the fourth keyword, and you'll probably laugh. Fourth keyword. G-string. G-string.
Is it actually is it Heavy Metal Geomatrix?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
It is Heavy Metal Geomatrix.
Yeah, I hear that. Nice one, Tom.
That's 7 points for the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod team. Oh. That's 8 points. That's 8 points. You can still win Dreamcast years if you get the answer for the next one in the first or the second keyword.
No pressure, Rich. No pressure, Rich.
Chances are good then. Okay, cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Just to go through the rest of the keywords for that one. So it was we had Suspicion, Dystopian Future, Big Gun, G-String. Then it was Virtual Warrior, Confusing Ending, Arena, Global Warming, Team Combat, and the last keyword was Metal Soundtrack, which hopefully should have got most people there.
I mean, what does it say about me that I got it on G-String?
I was just about to say that, yeah.
Is that a theme of heavy metal? Global Warming? I don't know. Maybe I haven't read into it as much as I should have, perhaps. I don't know. Oh, well.
I've not played it to tell you, but yeah. That was a keyword on IMDb, so I'm assuming that at some point somewhere there was something to do with global warming in there, even if it was like a passing mention.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, should we move on to the third game?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yep.
Here we go. Third game. First keyword. Laser gun.
It could be Gundam as well, maybe. EFF versus Zeon and DX, possibly.
Was that 2002, though?
Yeah.
It was. Okay, go for that then.
Unless you had something else.
No.
That.
That, what you just said. I'm not going to repeat it.
That.
So, that one. No, it's not that.
Okay.
Is it a Karuga?
You guessing a Karuga?
Yes, I am going to guess a Karuga.
It's not a Karuga.
I thought you were going to snatch it then. It's like,
that would be hilarious.
It would be.
Okay, this is your last chance to win Dreamcast years. The second keyword is outer space. Any thoughts? Any guesses from either side?
Laser gun in outer space.
Space Channel 5 Part 2?
Is that your answer, Rich?
Yes.
That is correct.
Oh, nice, Rich.
That just dawned on me. I thought, wait a second.
Well done.
That's incredible. Well, you have now you've won.
Yes. Congratulations.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, I'll send you a beer, Rich. I'll send you a beer, mate. That's amazing.
Cool. Very, very good. Well, do you want me to run through the rest of the keywords?
Can't believe you, Lewis.
So the keywords were laser gun, outer space, multi-platform, sequel, miming, space world, dancing, campy, news reporter, and the last one was knee-high boots.
Oh yeah, if we got down to the sort of the halfway point, if Rich hadn't played a blinder, then I think we probably would have been there.
Yeah.
Wait, so like what are these keywords and why is knee-high boots like so number one? Like,
so it's so they don't put them in order on Internet Movie Database. Oh, okay. I put them into an order that I think would be I go from like most likely to not be able, you know, really difficult to easy. So because if you get it on the most difficult, then you get the most points essentially. But yeah, there's IMDb has a shitload of these keywords essentially for games. Some games have none, some games have very few, but these particular games had enough that I could make a good quiz out of it.
Nice. The plot twist is that Andrew and Rich have always just referred to Space Channel 5 Part 2 as the space gun laser game. So I'm demanding a recount.
Well, let's do this. So I've got my anagram tiebreaker. So obviously there's no tie to break, but let's see who can get this. So it's first answer will win, essentially. First answer correctly. So throw your guesses out. The anagram is sun neck pain. Sun as in S-O-N. Sun neck pain. Any guesses? Sun neck pain.
I've drawn a blank.
No, I can't think.
Any more clues?
You have discussed it as one of the games of 2002.
A game that we've mentioned.
The hell?
Quick, what were they? I can't remember. It's an hour ago.
Sun neck pain.
A cannon spike. No.
That is correct. It's cannon spike.
Yay! Damn.
I was trying to think back to what we discussed about an hour ago, and I was just like, I can't think of any of them. Well, I'm worried now.
It is late, Tom, to be fair.
It is, yeah.
It's getting on. But there you go. So well done, Dreamcast Years team. You have won the final crossover quiz. Well done.
Yay.
Well done, Rich.
Lots of clicks and claps, absolutely. Very, very good guess, Rich. That was fantastic. Pulling it out of the bag right at the last minute. And very fitting as well, since this is basically it's the last episode of a Dreamcast Years related podcast that will go out on the air on online, which is quite sad. The final episode of Dreamcast Years will be physical only, and we'll be releasing to the people who purchased it as part of the Dreamcast Year 2 campaign. It's being produced as we speak. We've actually recorded it, but myself, Rich, and Jason recorded the final episode. Steve wasn't able to come and join us for that one. So this is the final episode to be aired online anywhere. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, guys, I just want to say as well, it's been a pleasure to be involved, and it's Dreamcast Year's podcast has been, you know, certainly one that I've listened to over the years. So A, well done, and B, you know, good luck in the next sort of things. I know that some of you guys are obviously part of the Dream Pod now, but well done essentially for just creating something out of nothing and having great success with it. So yeah.
Thank you.
Nice one.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being on it too. You and Lewis were both guests. So thank you very much for joining us for episodes as well.
I'm glad we got to do this crossover as well. That was good fun. But I will say I'll miss the podcast, but you know, maybe one day you'll all reunite, a reunion. I tell you what, I just loved the attention to the year. I feel like there's no podcast I really listened to where, like, when you discuss the year, I kind of feel transported back to that time, what with like the music and the films, and it's great. Just, you know, the weird news that you're like, whoa, I forgot about that. And the oftentimes it went into dismal territory.
Just like we did today.
Yeah, happy to, be here on this send-off. And, you know, well done, Rich and Jason, for winning, you bastards.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it's been great. I mean, the good thing is, like you say, Tom, myself and Rich are both on DreamPod, so we'll be on various episodes. And Rich and Jason are on the What's Wrong with Wolfie pod, which also takes a year's kind of format, right? So you look at various years in the 90s and look at the films, the games, the TV shows in separate episodes, which is a really nice format, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I just want to say as well, guys, that interview you did with Dominic Diamond was awesome.
Oh, thank
that was
you.
So good. I really enjoyed that. So, again, nice one.
That was realness. So, yeah.
Still doesn't feel like that happened.
Nah.
Everyone, definitely check out What's Wrong with Wolfie. Good podcast.
Thank you. Oh, I'm going all red.
But yeah, that's it's nice to be able to have a bit of a send off for it. And I think if anybody's interested in the final episode and you've not purchased it, I'm sure that when I have it manufactured, I may have extra copies left on CD. So let me know over on Twitter. I'm sure I'll be able to find a spare copy for you, but I don't have it in hand yet, but it literally is going to hopefully go to manufacture next week, which is very exciting. So
I'm just going to torrent it, so...
We mentioned in the episode that somebody will no doubt put it online at some point, and whoever that is, I'm disappointed in already. So.
my partner's album got put on a forum, like, you know, for illegal download, and at first we were like, damn, but then we're like, oh, you've made it, like, people find your music interesting enough to pirate, you know. So
true. Yeah. It's a compliment, I guess, isn't it? But there you go. So yeah, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed doing these crossovers as well. I think it's nice to look at the Dreamcast in this kind of way, looking at the different years of it. And I mean, we could go on technically. We could. I mean, there's been games stretching onwards to now, but of course, there's the vast wilderness years where there was nothing. So we'd have years where we'd just be like talking about Border Down, and that would be about it. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's been fun, and very glad to have gotten you on the final episode, Tom, for the crossover. Managed to wrangle you in, because you've told me off several times for not getting you on, which was funny.
No, there's been several times attempts where I've been meant to be on it, but for whatever reason I couldn't, so this was 100% shoo-in. I had to be on it. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, thank you. Very true. There we go. So yeah, thank you very much everybody for listening. Do go check out Dreamcast Years. It's still up, it's still there. You can still listen to all the episodes apart from the final one, of course, because it will be physical only. So yeah, give them a listen if you fancy, if you've not listened already. And of course, the Dreamcast Junkyard, the DreamPod, has many awesome episodes lined up. And we've got some ideas for the ones coming up that hopefully we will bring to you very soon. Hopefully with some more guests as well, because guests always go down a storm. What? So, All right, well, I think that's about it. Let's just go around and do the usual. Lewis, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find me at LewisJFC and writing up on the Junkyard blog occasionally, which I'm sure you'll plug in a second, Andrew. But yeah, check me out on the internet at those places.
Absolutely. Tom, I was about to say, where are you? But you're nowhere and everywhere at the same time.
Indeed, yes. You can find me writing my nonsense on the Dreamcast Junkyard blog. I'm not on social media because I don't particularly like social media, but that's a topic for another five-hour podcast that I will record immediately after this one and release to my fans. No. No. Yeah, so just on the blog.
Awesome. Rich, where can we find you?
You can just find me on Twitter at TheBittenHero.
Lovely. And Jason, what about yourself?
Firstly, I just had to just say thank you. It's been a pleasure to podcast with you all, even to Andrew, and I will even include Rich, even though I podcast with you every 2 weeks. But, you know, to
it's
Tom.
So special.
Yeah, Tom, Lewis, and any of the other, and Steve, and any of the Dreamcast Junkyard crew that I've podcast with in the past. Yeah, it's just been a pleasure, and thank you for having me here. It's been an honour, and yeah, you can find me on Twitter at GamerJasonUK.
Oh, thanks very much, Jason. And can you just tell people where they can find the Wolfie Pod as well?
Yes, the Wolfie Pod, we're just at the end of 1997 now, easing into 1998 shortly. And yeah, you can find that on Twitter and Instagram at The Wolfie Pod, or our website is thewolfiepod.com.
Excellent. You can find me at Odmont84 on Twitter. You can still for now find the Dreamcast Years at Dreamcast Years on Twitter. I don't go on it very often, unfortunately, because I'm so-so with social media at the moment, so I just about manage my own social media, but anything else I find difficult. And you can go to dreamcastyears.co.uk, which I will continue to keep up there, because there's all the podcast episodes are there, as well as most anywhere you can find podcasts, pretty much. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts should all be there still. And yeah, just to echo Jason there, thank you to everybody. It's been fantastic to do Dreamcast Years. Thank you to Steve, who couldn't be here and couldn't make the final episode either, but without Steve we couldn't do any of the Dreamcast Years stuff. So yeah, big thank you to him. Obviously thank you to Rich and Jason, to anybody who's ever guested, to the Dreamcast Junkyard, to my mum, to my dad, to God.
Don't forget your cats.
to the cats, yes, absolutely.
And of course, listeners for listening, I suppose.
Of course, and the listeners who, I wouldn't even be here without you. Thank you so much. I'm going to fake cry and clutch my award and leave the stage.
Thank you to absolutely. Sega for making the Dreamcast.
Thank you, Sega. Without you, it wouldn't have been possible.
Thank you to the person who invented gaming originally.
Just don't punch anyone on your way down.
Oh, yeah. I will do my best. I'll try. But seriously though, thank you very much to everybody who listened to the Dreamcast years and to everybody who listens to the Dreamcast Junkyard, the Dream Pod, because I feel like there's a lot of crossover there. So you probably listen to both if you listen to one. But yeah, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you continue listening to Dream Pod, because as I said, we've got lots of cool stuff going on coming up soon. You can find out more about that at the DC Junkyard on Twitter. So do follow that for all the latest news and memes from Lewis and Mike, who manage the account, which is always good. And of course, go over to the dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, where you can find all the latest news as well. Lots of lovely articles. We've had a news roundup fairly recently, which is great. And of course, you can find everything to do with the podcast. And finally, just to give another shout out to our Buy Me a Coffee page as well. If you love what we do, if you really enjoy the content that we make here, it'd be really we'd love for you to help support us if you can afford it. Obviously, it's difficult times for many people right now, so you know we'll do this anyway because we love doing it. But if you want to support us to help us keep the website up, to help us pay for the lovely podcasting kind of service that we use now, because you might have noticed we have lovely crisp and clear voices, which is very different from what we did pre episode 100. And if you want to help us keep that up and make everything nice and high quality, feel free to donate a few VMU batteries to us, won't you, over at buymeacoffee.com/DC Junkyard. It would be much appreciated if you can. All right, I think that's everything. I think I've covered every single thing I could possibly could think of. Anybody else got anything left to say?
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Okay.
Apart from that, I had that to say. So
you had that to say, and that as well.
And that.
So let's stop before this gets into a horrible cycle. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and keep on dreaming. Hello and welcome, Dreamers, to the very first Dreamcast Years podcast. I'm Andrew Dickinson and I'll be your host. The Dreamcast Years to me was a period of time when gaming was at its best. It was a golden age of gaming, and I classify that as the years from between 1997 and 2008, which is roughly correlates to the time that the Dreamcast was a current console.